Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Russia's Sputnik Radio, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese government is extending its COVID state of emergency until the end of September. Police in Hong Kong have arrested pro-democracy activists creating vigils for victims of the Tiananmen Square massacre. In Myanmar, the National Pro-Democracy Unity Government has called for a nationwide uprising against the military junta. The International Atomic Energy Agency plans to send a team of experts to examine the plan to intentionally dump radioactive water from Fukushima into the Pacific Ocean. NHK Japan.
Japan's government is extending the coronavirus state of emergency in many parts of the country. It'll remain in place for 19 prefectures, including Tokyo and Osaka, until the end of September. The prime minister says new infections are declining across the nation, but warns the number of serious cases remains high.
Experts say we should consider various factors when deciding whether to lift the emergency declaration. These include hospital occupancy rate, the number of seriously ill patients, the number of new cases, the number of people isolating at home, and the extent to which the vaccines are improving the situation. So, we made our decision based on these points.
Suga stressed the government would finish giving shots to everyone who wants them in October or November. He added the government plans to ease restrictions using a system that checks vaccination certificates or negative test results. Police in Hong Kong have arrested 4 members of a pro-democracy group that have been organizing annual vigils for victims of the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown. Police on Wednesday announced the arrests of senior members of the Hong Kong Alliance in Support of Patriotic Democratic Movements of China. Its vice chair, Chow Hung-tung, was among the 4. The police say the group failed to provide information they had requested by their deadline on Tuesday. They say its failure to comply violated the national security law. The group's leaders, including Lee Chuk-yan, are already in jail for organizing unauthorized rallies. The police had asked the alliance to provide information on its members and activities. They said the information was necessary to prevent the group from conspiring with foreign forces and threatening national security. Chow and the others went to police headquarters on Tuesday, but refused to provide the information. The alliance was banned from holding its Tiananmen vigils for the past 2 years. It appears to be set to join the list of pro-democracy unions and protest organizers in Hong Kong that have been forced to disband. Myanmar's military has denounced the call by the pro-democracy National Unity Government for a nationwide uprising against the junta, saying any such attempt would fail. NUG Acting President Dua Lashi La called for revolt in an online video on Tuesday, blaming the military for the ongoing detention, torture, and killing of dissidents.
We see that the National Unity Government has released a statement. In the meantime, the media are reporting where fighting is taking place, which has resulted in panic buying for food supplies.
State-run media report the NUG merely wants to show it's done something ahead of the UN General Assembly later this month. In the city of Yangon, people have been rushing to buy essentials, including food and medicine, at supermarkets. This comes after Duwalashi La called on people in the video to stock up on necessities and avoid going outside for non-essential purposes. He also urged the People's Defense Force, made up of armed civilians, along with ethnic militias, to attack the military. Attacks by dissidents against the military have continued around the country for months. Local media report there were several attacks by the People's Defense Force on Tuesday. The International Atomic Energy Agency says it plans to send a team of experts to Japan. The team will examine the government's plan to release treated water into the ocean from the crippled nuclear plant in Fukushima. IAEA officials, including the head of the Department of Nuclear Safety and Security, Lidi Evrar, have been in Japan this week. They're discussing the water discharge plan with government ministries and agencies. Evrar said IAEA experts will review the plan with an emphasis on transparency and objectivity and in line with international standards. The Japanese government plans to dilute treated water containing radioactive tritium to levels below national standards and start releasing it in about 2 years. The IAEA aims to send experts to Japan around December. The team will conduct a study at the Fukushima Daiichi plant and interview government and utility officials. They'll examine the water the government plans to release into the ocean. They'll also examine the appropriateness of the water discharge plan and the possible impact on the environment. The team will then compile a report.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Sputnik Radio. Afshin Ratansi spoke with documentary filmmaker John Pilger on the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Pilger says the war must be seen as another chapter in Western imperialism, which is now shifting its focus to China. He refutes the notion that this was a good war and points out the cooperation between the Taliban and the U.S. in the 80s and 90s. Also, the natural gas pipeline that had been proposed by Unocal with the assistance of Halliburton, whose CEO in 1998 was Dick Cheney, before he became vice president in 2000. Sputnik Radio.
Joining me now in the studio to discuss the future of NATO's so-called forever wars and of the so-called end to the USA's longest war in history could mark the beginning of a new world order is legendary filmmaker and journalist John Pilger. Was this war, which is considered the good war by liberals, by Starmer and Johnson here and by Democrats and Pelosi and all of that, is it British and Americans are incompetent?
Certainly incompetent. But most imperialists are incompetent. They make mistakes and kill large numbers of people they didn't mean to kill, so they say. For 20 years, this war has been heading towards a foregone conclusion. Here we had imperial powers pulling out. We've had enough of Afghanistan. We've only spent, what is it? You'll probably know, $1 trillion. But it's going nowhere. Anyway, we've got a new enemy on the horizon, and the British have just sent a brand new aircraft carrier off to frighten this new enemy, China. So we want to switch it around there. The strategists at the Ministry of Defense and in the Pentagon in Washington are writing a new scenario. It'll still be about the prospect of killing people. If you look at the numbers that they predict will be killed in either a reaction to a Chinese attack, as they put it, or in their own preemptive attack, are in the millions. That's imperialism. We must use that term. I feel very strongly about this. It's not an agitprop term from the 60s. It used to be a term with great respectability, and in fact, people in this country fought for the reputation of being imperialist, Christian gentlemen going off to the empire, not only to spread the message, but to spread the power of the imperial center. And that's what we've had for 20 years in Afghanistan. I reported Afghanistan, I reported Vietnam, almost every war involving my own country, Britain, Australia, the United States, has been an imperial war. That is, we, that word that is used so loosely and so irresponsibly by media, we invading somebody else's country. I watched Sky News last night. They talked about how 9/11 had its origins and planning and execution in Afghanistan. That's just not true. You know, Afghanistan was the fall guy, if you like. The planning was done in the United States, and there wasn't a single Afghani among them. They were mostly Saudis. I mean, all this has been struck from our consciousness, our day-to-day consciousness. When you look back on what Blair said at the time of the invasion of Afghanistan, this is a moment to seize, he said, following 9/11. The kaleidoscope has been shaken. The pieces are in flux. Soon they will settle again. Before they do, let us order, reorder this world around us. For me, that is one of the clearest statements of an imperialist. In other words, we'll go into a country, we'll blow it all up, we'll change it all around, we'll undermine its culture, we'll kill its people, and we'll make it a better place.
It has to be said that Afghanistan is considered by liberals as the good war, as I was saying earlier, and it's repeated often that this is roots of this are lie in the fight with the Russians who had come to support Najibullah, who did such wonderful things for women's schools and so on, and therefore MI6 and the CIA had to help the Mujahideen that would morph into the Taliban, into Al-Qaeda, into ISIS, into...
Well, it was a project. It was called Operation Cyclone. It was to destroy any government that appeared in Kabul that was progressive, and one government did appear in 1978, a government, the PDPA government, and they brought in the most extraordinary progressive government, equal rights right across the board for women. Illiteracy, which was then 30-odd% in Afghanistan, was within a decade 90-odd%. At the time of this government, the United States, this is a leaked cable from the U.S. Embassy in Kabul in August 1979. The U.S. Embassy reported that the United States' larger interests will be served by the demise of the PDPA government, despite whatever setbacks this might mean for future social and economic reforms in Afghanistan. In other words, rights of women can go to hell. The rights of poor people can go to hell.
And MI6, CIA, yeah, they know this.
MI6, CIA. We want this country. We want it for various reasons. It's strategically very importantly placed. The Taliban, in fact, far from being where 9/11 was plotted and planned and put together, the Taliban had been a client state of the United States. Very few know that. And the Bill Clinton administration, the Taliban leadership, including some of the people we're seeing now, were invited to the United States, and they went to the CIA in Langley, Virginia. Why? Because the U.S. wanted an American oil company to build a natural gas pipeline from Turkmenistan through Afghanistan to Pakistan. It's absolutely crucial. The alternative routes were via Russia and Iran. That wasn't on. It was only when Bush came to power, George W. Bush, that his administration actually started to question the reliability of the Taliban to deliver on a deal. Now, this deal, the head of this deal was Dick Cheney, who became Bush's vice president.
The 20-year anniversary of 9/11 coming up, but of course the 9/11 that won't be covered on any of the stations will be Chile 1973, which you again mention in The War You Don't See.
We are drowned in this tsunami of propaganda that the center of the world, the center of importance, the day the world changed. I don't think it was the day the world changed, actually. I think the world changed a lot before that, during the Korean War, when the Americans decided they were going to become a true imperial power. It certainly changed with the fall of the Berlin Wall and many others. We are conditioned to believe that everything around this one event, that only they deserve remembrance, not the people in Chile. Only they deserve mourning, not the orator, the woman with her six dead children in Afghanistan. We are so backward in that we've yet to achieve this equality of consciousness about human beings. What happens in the United States, that's what matters. Everything else flows from that.
John Belger, thank you.
That interview was by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com, as well as on YouTube. Search for Going Underground. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. A series of news briefs from Afghanistan, the Gaza Strip, France in Syria, activists being given long prison terms in Belarus, a coup in Guinea, Mexico decriminalizes abortion. In Brazil, President Bolsonaro rallied his supporters to not trust the Supreme Court or upcoming election results. Opposition rallies occurred at the same time. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Afghanistan's former president, Ashraf Ghani, has published a statement on Twitter apologizing to Afghans for fleeing the country. He said that staying in Kabul would have risked setting off fighting in the city. Ghani is currently in Abu Dhabi, where he has also denied claims that he took millions of dollars out of Afghanistan.
Israel has launched new airstrikes against Gaza that it says targeted a Hamas rocket manufacturing site and a military compound. The Israeli army said the attack was in a response to the launch of balloon bombs by Hamas that caused fires in Israel.
In France, one of the country's biggest companies has lost a bid to dismiss a charge of complicity in crimes against humanity in Syria's civil war. Cement group Lafarge is accused of paying millions of euros to jihadist groups to keep a factory open. The ruling by France's top court could lead to a trial.
A Belarusian court on Monday sentenced protest leader Maria Kolesnikova to 11 years in prison. She was found guilty of charges connected to her role in demonstrations in 2020 against longtime authoritarian leader Alexander Lukashenko. Fellow activist Maxim Zinek was handed a 10-year sentence in the same trial. Kolesnikova is one of the best-known faces of the Belarusian opposition movement. Germany has accused Russia of carrying out new cyber attacks on its parliament. Berlin says it has reliable information that a group linked to Russian military intelligence tried to steal lawmakers' personal details. The German Foreign Ministry has warned Moscow to end the alleged hacking activity immediately.
Guinea's main opposition leader, Selu Dalein Diallo, says he's ready to take part in a transition government after Sunday's coup. The new military leaders have released at least 79 political prisoners. The junta earlier promised to free all activists and politicians detained under former President Alpha Conde.
West Africa's main political and economic bloc has suspended Guinea's membership following last Sunday's military coup. The leaders from the 15-member countries called for the return of order and the release of ousted President Alpha Conde.
Mexico's Supreme Court has ruled that it is unconstitutional to penalize abortion. The decision overturns a law that made abortion a criminal offense. It's been described as a historic step for women's rights in Mexico. Brazil's right-wing President Jair Bolsonaro rallied tens of thousands of supporters on Tuesday to mark the country's Independence Day. But his opponents also turned out in force to protest his rule. With Bolsonaro's popularity slipping a year ahead of national elections, the leader, dubbed the Trump of the tropics, is ramping up his attacks on critics, including the courts and the electoral system.
This year's Independence Day celebrations in Brazil were not about national unity. Supporters of far-right President Jair Bolsonaro turned out by the thousands in Sao Paulo and Brasilia to listen as he attacked the country's democratic institutions. We can't believe in a voting system that doesn't allow any security. Which is also to say that there isn't one person on the Superior Electoral Court who is going to tell us that this process is safe and reliable. Because it isn't. Echoing former U.S. President Donald Trump's campaign speeches, Bolsonaro alleged without evidence that Brazil's electoral system is rigged against him. He also said he will refuse to obey the Supreme Court. His supporters are frustrated by checks on his power. We came here to ask the president to take control of our country if he can do it. We're begging the president to take out this bunch of thieves in the Supreme Court. We're here to support our president because he's fighting against the scum who want to destroy Brazil so the Reds can come in. Police were out in force following reports that protesters planned to storm the Supreme Court building. With just over a year left in his term, Bolsonaro's approval rating has fallen to an all-time low. Polls show he would lose the election to left-wing former President Lula da Silva if it were held now. Over half of Brazilians want to see him go, and they also made a strong showing on Independence Day. Bolsonaro should be impeached. He should go. The working class needs to come together to get rid of Bolsonaro and build a government of the working class without businessmen. Some say Bolsonaro is taking a page out of Trump's playbook. If so, he's likely hoping for a better result when Brazilians go to the polls next year.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channel called DW News. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could assist me by supporting this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please help me continue producing this weekly show, which I freely distribute to radio stations and the Internet. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Joe Biden signed on Tuesday another year extension of the so-called Trading with the Enemy Act in order to sustain the economic blockade on the people of Cuba. Mexico City removed the statue of Christopher Columbus, which will be replaced by that of an Olmec woman as part of a celebration of indigenous women. In Venezuela, President Maduro insisted that Juan Guaido will be prosecuted for stealing $8 billion, bringing coup attempts and sanctions on the people. Radio Havana, Cuba.
U.S. President Joe Biden signed on Tuesday the extension for another year of the Trading with the Enemy Act, one of the White House statutes that sustains the economic, commercial, and financial blockade against Cuba. The Presidential Determination Memorandum for the Secretaries of State and Treasury, published on the White House website, states that the continuation of the exercise of these authorities concerning Cuba for 1 year is in the national interest of the United States, and sets September 14, 2022, as the date for a new review. The repeated prolongation of the blockade ignores the rejection by the absolute majority of the world community expressed annually at the UN of the genocidal policy which, in the context of COVID-19, the US government opportunistically intensified in an obstinate attempt to surrender the Cuban people to hunger, disease, and misery. Cuba's most recent report in that instance states that the accumulated damages amount to $147,853.3 million and shows how, between April and December 2020 alone, the blockade caused losses in the order of $3,586.9 million.
Mexico City's head of government, Claudia Sheinbaum, reports that the statue of Christopher Columbus, which was removed from Paseo de la Reforma, will now be replaced by that of an Olmec woman. As part of the celebration of the International Day of Indigenous Women, the head of government explained that the objective of placing another sculpture is to recognize the women of the native peoples. Sheinbaum is, in this regard, detailed that the statue that will replace Columbus seeks to vindicate the indigenous woman and what she represents in our history as an act of social justice and a recognition to the original peoples and what women represent in the history of the country. Today, with all the support of the National Institute of Anthropology and History, we announce that the Glorieta de Colón, very soon, already close to this day, October the 12th, which is the day of La Raza, is the great recognition to the 500 years of resistance. Every October the 12th, dozens of indigenous people from different regions of the country gather at the traffic circle where the monument is located in the Mexican capital to show their rejection of colonization, discrimination against native peoples, and slavery. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has stressed that the dialogues in Mexico will not provide impunity for Juan Guaido, who will be prosecuted judicially. There will be no impunity neither in Mexico nor on Mars. Here, there will be no impunity. There has to be justice. Severe justice because there is much damage that has been done to the life of the Venezuelan family, said the Venezuelan president during an interview broadcast this Sunday by Venezuelan television. Listing the damages inflicted by Guaido on Venezuela, Maduro has allowed two sanctions, coup attempts, and the seizure and theft of more than $8 billion in blocked Venezuelan state bank accounts. In this regard, he has denounced that the sanctions imposed on Venezuela at the request of the opposition have caused several problems for the Venezuelan people, prohibiting economic activity, export, and free trade for the country. President Nicolas Maduro has called on the United States Congress to investigate the destination of resources granted by Trump to coup leaders in Venezuela.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but the podcast links are not updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows. Please take a moment and make a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.